Welcome in and hello. It is The Drive. Carmichael Dave here. Kyle Madsen behind the glass. Katie off today. She had a little surgery done on her nose yesterday. She is recovering. She'll be back tomorrow. Florida Georgia Line tickets and a family four-pack to Marvel Universe. Age of Heroes. It's live. Get to see Iron Man fly around right in front of your face. We'll have tickets for that. Towards the bottom of the hour, Sam Amick going to join us in just moments as we continue talking. Kyrie Irving, Isaiah Thomas. We're also following John Jones, failing his drug test. Dana White has not stripped him of the title yet, but you can expect that. We talked about that quite a bit. As Sam gets on the phone, just something that's in my craw that has nothing to do with anything. So I'll make the guy on Twitter happy who wants to talk about something other than basketball for a second. I got you covered. Every day Twitter comes up with some sort of debate out of the blue, and I enjoy these. They're great ideas. It's good conversation. Today's debate apparently is going to be whether or not the movie Face Off with Nicolas Cage and John Travolta was a good movie. And it just really bothers me because that movie has a legion of people that loved it. I think it's one of the stupidest movies ever created. The premise is stupid. The acting is stupid. There are about 50 different times that either guy could have gotten killed off and didn't in the most stupid way. And the whole thing is based upon the fact that they're going to wear each other's face, have the same body, even though they're completely different. And no one, including people they're married to, will notice. You seen the movie Face Off, Kyle? I know you were getting Sam Amick on.
No, I thought you were talking about Arya Stark.
No, which is a different type. At least there, they're in a weird world with dragons and stuff. If there had been dragons in Face Off, I'd have been fine with it. But it's one of those things where if you think Face Off is a good movie, then I got to question our friendship. Talking in general, USA Today, Sam Amick joining us. Sam, are you a Face Off guy? Please say no.
I haven't seen that in years, brother. So,
Me neither.
I can tell. I mean, I hate to say it. I remember enjoying it. And apparently and clearly, I need to watch it again and reassess.
You do. You really do. And it comes on. Face Off made Broken Arrow look like an Oscar. I'm just saying. It's today's Twitter debate, Sam. I know you got your head. By the way, and I mentioned this earlier, I don't generally feel bad for people in the media being one, but yet this is one of those times where I do kind of, my heart does go out to several. The NBA has become year-round. I know Brian Windhorst was tweeting that he was landing in Rome with his wife when the Kyrie story broke. So if for no other reason I mentioned this, good on you for taking your lovely family on vacation a couple weeks ago. Because when I heard that about Brian, I thought, God, I can only imagine your lovely wife and how patient she is, as you and I both come from the Patient Wives Club, and having to deal with that if this trade had broke while you guys were on vacation 2 weeks ago.
No, you're right. Although we've kind of had it from both angles. So the short version is when we were in Hawaii, the Kyrie trade request broke. And so my colleague Jeff Zilgit ended up being buried in work while I was out on the island. And then this time around, as Jeff was waist deep in the waters of Colorado Rivers out in Aspen fly fishing, this story breaks. And for our outfit, traditionally, he does most of the Cavs coverage, so I had to jump on. And anybody who was driving on Laguna and Bond Road in Elk Grove yesterday might have seen a pretty hilarious scene, which was me, a guy who does not normally – I'm not a cyclist, but I've got a mountain bike, right? So naturally, I had chose to ride my bike to the gym, and this thing breaks as I'm over there, and I'm like 4 miles from my house. And I'm riding, hustling back to the house on the bicycle. The chain falls off the gear because Murphy's Law kicks in. And so I wasn't in Rome, but I had my own debacle. I was on the side of the road with, grease all over my hands trying to just get back in front of the computer. So it was kind of chaotic.
I love when you start seeing the headlines. I don't know why it makes me laugh when you see a headline that the Cavs in Boston were in active talks for Kyrie Irving, because I imagine – like they're playing tennis or something while they're talking. But in this case, is this the type of thing, does it really work this way, Sam, where Kyrie Irving makes his trade request, weeks ago, And did somebody call somebody and this all came together in a matter of hours? I'm always fascinated by the machinations. Or do you think this is something that had been bandied about for a while and something, and I believe that something might have been Cleveland being okay without getting Jason Tatum back, but something broke at some point that opened up the dam?
Yeah, I mean, I jumped on the conference call yesterday with Danny Ainge, the Celtics GM, and he made it real clear. They'd been talking to Cleveland for quite some time. Now, in terms of the structure of this trade, you know, he said a month ago this trade was not available to them. He didn't give clarity on the timeline specifically and, you know, when this iteration came about. The Tatum thing has certainly been speculated, and he was asked directly yesterday how hard the Cavs pushed for Tatum. He didn't speak on it. But, you know, it's not – I don't think it's a case of it all heating up in the course of one day yesterday. It's somebody deciding that it's heating up so much that they're getting near the finish line, and so they make that decision to leak it to somebody. So, you know, it did seem super fast, but this has obviously been something that goes back to June with Kyrie shocking the world with, you know, telling the Cavs he didn't want to be there anymore. And, I mean, I still – as long as I've been doing this and we've been doing this, you know, I can't get over this summer, Dave, and just all the fireworks. You know what I mean? It's just nonstop. I mean, the exciting part is that right about the time that everybody was whining about the Warriors making things boring, I mean, we've got a ton to watch this coming season.
Sam Amick of USA Today with us. First time two players have been traded for each other that faced off in either the Eastern in the conference finals or the finals. You also have the first pick in the 2011 draft traded in part for the last pick in the 2011 draft. We were talking about this earlier, Sam. I hate fence sitting, and I hate when you ask who won the trade, kind of going back and forth and saying, well, both teams came out great. But I really do think, considering the situation, that Kobe Altman coming in, and good for him, getting the haul he got, and then considering Jason Tatum's in there, Jay Crowder was kind of a man out of there. I don't think Boston was gonna max out Isaiah Thomas. And you know, that Brooklyn pick is a huge deal, but it just seems to me like both teams got a good deal.
No, I agree. Because the thing, you know, I mean, the only qualifier, I'm in the same boat. I mean, I had to do a video last night, and like every media company, they want you to just come strong with the take on one side or the other. And then I kind of did what you're doing, which is both sides got better. But the one thing for the Cavs is that, for one, it's, to me, it is painful to give somebody like Kyrie to a rival, not only a rival, but a team that won, you know, earned the top seed in the East last season, a team that even though you took care of them in the conference finals, you know, they were the number one threat in the East. And to give them Kyrie Irving is, it could play out in a painful way this season, because I think he's going to fit really well. The other thing is that, you know, at minimum, the Cavs can feel great about getting that 2018 first rounder. They could be a really good pick, because the Isaiah thing is a total crapshoot. And I think that's why Boston was comfortable moving on from him. As much as I love his game, that hip story is not going away. I mean, on that conference call that Danny Ainge did, you know, he had intimated pretty clearly that Isaiah might not be ready at the start of the season. And, you know, that's something to keep watching. And then with him coming up in free agency this summer, I mean, the reality is he's going to be 29 years old entering free agency. And the idea of giving him a five-year, $178 million contract, which is what Boston was going to be able to give him, was obviously something they didn't want to do. So the Cavs have a lot of kind of stuff to work through when it comes to Isaiah, but thankfully they get some other pieces too.
Better return for Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, with Kyrie Irving going over. So better return, Kyrie Irving or Alex Oriaki in a trade exception. Who won that?
What am I missing here? What are you hearkening back to?
I'm hearkening back to the dumb Kings trade where they traded Isaiah Thomas for Alex Oriaki in a freaking pick. I'm always going to find a way to bring it back to us.
Nobody locally is over it. I forgot.
Is Isaiah Thomas?
You're putting me on the spot. I'm like, what is Dave doing?
Here's where I'm leading. Can you call Isaiah Thomas a journeyman at this point? This is 14.
Yeah. I mean, yes. And I'm very curious to see when he speaks for the first time. Like, I did reach out to him yesterday. I didn't hear back. His interview, I think, if he's being honest and candid, is going to be interesting, because the sense I got is is, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to hear that he was crushed by this move.
Really?
Because the Celtics, I mean, they had talked to him about being part of that culture. And I think he saw himself in a Celtics jersey for a long time. And now, as much as, okay, you know, right now on paper, you say, I'm going to join LeBron and be a contender. But LeBron might leave next summer. And what if he, I mean, you know, and Isaiah's a free agent, so he'll have freedom. But, you know, I think he had really bought into what he and the Celtics had built, and the fans were behind them. And Danny made it real clear that that was a tough conversation when he spoke to Isaiah, and he really didn't want to elaborate on it. So, the sense I've gotten is that if you're Isaiah, you want to keep a good thing going. You don't want guys like us talking about whether or not this now means you're a journeyman, because usually journeyman, you know, equates to kind of marginal average success, not a guy who is energizing a storied fan base and doing really exciting things.
Sam Amick of USA Today with us. That's why I like having smart people like you on, because all show I've been saying, you know, I think Isaiah Thomas wakes up today, he's in a great mood. You get the feeling, you know, maybe Boston wasn't going to max a dude out, and Cleveland now almost has to if he wants to stay, you know, with the LeBron James situation. He goes to a team that's still the favorite to be in the finals. He gets to play with LeBron, which, by the way, is a great guy, for Isaiah Thomas to play with, where you almost have dueling point guards. But the point you bring up I hadn't really considered, and that was Isaiah has had a chip probably since the day he was born, but certainly being the last pick in the draft and then being underestimated. And I wonder if people are underestimating, to your point, Sam, how valuable to his psyche being one of those Boston pantheon, you know, he wasn't Brady, he wasn't Larry, he wasn't Poppy Ortiz, but Boston tends to latch on to those type of grit hustle dudes. And Isaiah Thomas was a guy that was a golden god out there.
For sure. And I hate to generalize or speak for anybody else, but in the NBA player community, I think in terms of just quality of life, I think Boston, by and large, is going to win over Cleveland.
Yeah.
And then you have more uncertainty with the Cleveland situation than you do with Boston. And then to your point, I think you're dead on, you've got a Boston community, by the way, not just the fans. I don't remember seeing a trade like this where multiple high-ranking media members on Twitter were almost taking up for Isaiah and not being afraid to share their affinity for him and their opinion as a result that they didn't love the trade. And, you know, you and I can both relate, because when Isaiah was in Sacramento, you find yourself going like, I don't care if it's basketball, you know, digging ditches, whatever your job is, you respect the way he attacks his line of work. It's really neat to see a guy who, you know, has got the deck stacked against him physically do what he's been able to do. So I think that bond and the fact that it was broken is definitely going to sit with him for a while.
Oh, and you mentioned, obviously, Isaiah is still such an immensely popular figure here in Sacramento. And I say this because I think the question needs to be asked, and you mentioned it. This is the conversation Isaiah Thomas doesn't want us having. But him going for the trade from Sacramento, by all accounts, was just stupid. Then Phoenix trades him. Then Boston trades him after the guy damn near averaged 30 points a game. And now he's on Cleveland. Is there something about Isaiah Thomas's game to general managers where they look at him and say, you know what, great numbers, good dude, team's not going to win a championship with Isaiah Thomas as your point guard? Is that narrative there?
I actually don't think it is. I think this one is not too difficult to parse out. And I think I was even sleeping on this trade possibility because of some of these factors. I mean, Dave, Kyrie Irving is 37 months younger than Isaiah. And not only that, he's got 2 years left on his contract instead of one. So you avoid that fork in the road next summer when, you know, next summer would not have been about some sort of kind of unspoken belief around the NBA that you couldn't win a title with Isaiah. Next summer would have been about the fact that he was 29 years old and he had had hip problems. And that was a ton of money to commit to a guy who, in terms of his production and more importantly, his effect on winning and their culture, like, he deserved a max contract. And if he did next year what he did last year, he would have deserved the full max. And, the only tricky part about Isaiah's story at this point in the NBA is that he stayed in college longer than most guys do. And then it took him a little while to really get this kind of momentum. And now, when he's playing the best ball of his career, he's just got a few more years, you know, under his belt than some of these other guys. The Kyrie thing, that's why it makes so much sense for Boston, because you just got Gordon Hayward, who I believe is 27. You know, Al Horford's in his 30s, but, you know, he's one of the few. They have a young group. They have draft picks coming down the line, potentially five in the next 2 years. They needed to have the timelines of their core stars be a little bit more in concert instead of having Isaiah kind of out here as an older point guard.
You and I both feed our families in large part based on the NBA and the interest in the NBA by readers, by listeners. And we had this conversation a ton last year. We're going to have it a ton this year. Coming out of this trade with all the hullabaloo surrounding it, is it still safe to say that if you had, I asked Kyle Madsen this question, if you had $150,000, Sam, and you had to bet it one way or the other, either that two of the Warriors, Cavs, and Boston will be in the finals next year, or anyone else in the entire NBA. I'm saying I'm pretty damn sure two of those three teams are going to be in the finals next year, and here we go again. The only difference from last year to this year is that we all knew it was going to be Golden State and Cleveland last year, maybe add Boston in there, but you've got three teams and then the rest of the NBA playing for second and third. Is that accurate, or do you think it's more wide open?
You're probably accurate. I like the Wizards squad, and they've got experience now, and, you know, John Wall just keeps getting better. So, you know, I give them a puncher's chance. And in the West, to a lesser degree, you know, even though I didn't really like San Antonio's offseason, they still have their core. And LaMarcus Aldridge, even if he doesn't want to be there, he's going to go play his game. And I mean, let's not forget how good they were last year.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Kawhi gets hurt in a bad time. So they kind of got railroaded. So this is not what the fans want to hear, because the fans, most of them seem to anyway, just gravitate towards that. Oh, what's the point? The Warriors are going to win it all. Like, I don't know if it's just because you spend years and years watching this thing in person and getting reminded every night that, you know, there's still, it's cliche, but you still got to play the games, you know, and the Warriors could have their injuries and the Warriors could have their problems. So I feel like there's a decent level of drama going into this season. Yes, if I was putting my money down, I think you probably have it right. Cavs, Celtics, Warriors, two of those three in the finals, but, you know, I'm not about to spend that cash anytime soon.
Well, and on the other hand, you brought up the Wizards, and I agree with you. I think it's sad that you've got John Wall and Bradley Beal, or over on Toronto, Kyle Lowry or DeMar DeRozan. These guys, odds are not going to be doing anything on these teams that matters much, because they're blocked. So if you're looking at teams like Houston or the Clippers or the Raptors or the Wizards, maybe fans of teams like the Kings or like the Timberwolves, maybe they can feel a little bit better because you have this block at the top. You're almost in a more advantageous position being in a rebuild right now than being a contender, though you're still probably going to have more fun this season watching more wins than losses.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, that is, like, if you're a Thunder fan, that's another one I would put in that class. You know, you know you're going to have a good time. But it's going to be frustrating because, you know, if you look at the history of the NBA, traditionally the idea of having players like Russell Westbrook and Paul George on the same team, or James Harden, Chris Paul, like in a vacuum, without knowing the context of the Warriors, you would feel like that should get you potentially to the finals. And now in the West, you look at that and you say, no, there's still a sizable gap between them and everybody else. So I'm with you. I think the only problem with that logic is there's no end in sight for the Warriors. So yeah. I don't know how long, you know, you feel comfortable in the rebuilding phase. You can't just stay on neutral and you know, wait till 5-6 years down the road and see if they finally fall off.
Last thing for you, because I know you'll be talking, obviously you'll be talking Kyrie all day long. Just off the wall for you, something we were debating the other day. Minnesota had 31 wins last year. Philadelphia had 28 wins last year. I understand you take injury into account and everything else, but if you had to guess, who's going to have the biggest jump in wins this year?
Between those two?
Between those two.
Yeah, I give it to Minnesota.
Yeah.
I mean, Philly's super exciting. I just, you know, you still, you end up, you want to see those guys healthy. I want to see them get to February, March without a major injury to one of their main guys, because that's what they've been struck with the last couple of years. Minnesota, it's just so much going on there with the Jimmy Butler deal, and now looking like maybe they lock up Andrew Wiggins on a max deal. I really like what they did. You know, the Jeff Teague thing, I'm curious to see how he fits at the point guard spot. But Karl-Anthony Towns, you know, just such a great player. Jamal Crawford, I like that pickup. Taj Gibson. Thibodeau being in his second year, which for him and the way he's wired, I think is he's getting to that sweet spot of they've now learned who he is, what he wants to do. And you would think this, you know, this season is when it's kind of embedded in what they, who they are, I guess. So I think Minnesota is going to get a whole lot better for sure.
I lied, last thing for you, because somebody on the text line specifically wanted to ask you this, and we did talk about this earlier. If for some silly reason the Cavs take that number one pick, that unprotected number one pick, and they flip it at the trade deadline for DeMarcus Cousins of the Pelicans, who I've said before, I don't think he's going to New Orleans. I don't think he's coming back to New Orleans. Does that improve their chances against the Warriors a decent amount to make a difference, in your opinion?
Man, I hadn't thought about that. I do like that mix. Yes, the answer is it does help their cause. I think if you asked me to put together a list of star players who could find a way to get the most out of somebody like DeMarcus, LeBron might be number one.
Yeah.
I think that would be tremendous, because I just think a lot of what has plagued DeMarcus personality-wise in the past, like it's going to just kind of disappear in that context, I think. And I think he'd be really good. And then you got the history with Isaiah, where, you correct me if you think I'm wrong, but as time has marched on, I felt like some of the wounds from their shared past have mostly dissipated. I think they'd be fine.
Agreed.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that would be super exciting. The only reason I'd say I don't see it happening is because, unfortunately for the Cavs, that would be the kind of calculated risk I don't think they'd be willing to take because of the LeBron factor next summer. Unless LeBron starts sending signs that he wants to stay in Cleveland, then the idea of giving up that pick and affecting your ability to rebuild if he leaves for a guy in DeMarcus who could also leave, I mean, you then would have your superstar trio all set to be free agents this coming summer, and you would have given up something with tremendous value in that Brooklyn pick. So, you know, I'm not really sure they would do it, but for this season, that would be pretty dynamic.
Always great to talk to the wonderful Sam Amick of USA Today. Follow him on Twitter, read his stuff online. And hey, Sam, stupid question. I'm sorry. I was just about to say, or get the paper. Does USA Today still do an actual paper? They don't, do they?
Oh, look at you. Knife to the heart.
No. I thought they wasn't it USA Today? That's,
yeah, man. Okay. We're still like at 1.2 million subscription circulation.
No, I'm not trying to.
Ouch. You don't spend a lot of time in hotels and airports lately, are you?
No, that's the thing. I know a lot of papers are switching around, and I don't want to plug incorrectly.
No, we do. To give you an idea, like last night, the trade breaks.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, I got to analyze this thing. And this doesn't happen all that often. I know we got to go. I'll make it quick. Uh-huh. But I get a call from one of our editors who I don't normally hear from, and he was frantic. Like, we got to have a column, and we got to have it in 40 minutes. So last night was one of those rare print deadline experiences that I don't have nearly as much anymore. But the whole point was, if I didn't hit that deadline,
right,
I think we were going to lose. The column would not have made it into like 70% of the papers. And so, yeah, if you look today, the breakdown is in there. We do still have a print edition. We're trying to, like everybody else, we're trying to marry, kind of, you know, survive the print era that is dying and then grow enough digitally to keep making things work. Before you dump me, Dave, and this is not of interest to your listeners, but I had to bring it up. I did literally laugh out loud today at your Facebook post about eating beets.
Dude,
that made my day.
Brother, I almost had a heart attack.
I have done the same exact thing.
Yep.
I, you know, the Porch restaurant in Sac?
I do.
We give a little bit of free pub here.
Uh-huh.
Great restaurant. I ate a bunch of beets there. Had a good time, and the next day,
yep,
go to the restroom.
Uh-huh.
And wait, do I have a heart problem? Like, what is going on here? This is really scary. Took me about 5 minutes. I had 5 minutes of dread.
Yep.
And then it was like, oh, that's right.
I was ready to call my wife and get a ride to the hospital. Oh, I ate beets. Always remember the next day, kids. You ate beets. That's a perfect way to finish. Go down to your local bodega, grocery store, and get what is possibly the greatest newspaper in the history of the world, the USA Today, available near you. And, of course, you can go online as a secondary format as well. The lovely and talented Sam Amick. Thank you, buddy.
All right, brother. See you. Right,
take care. We are way late for a break. AC and Sam, I see you on the line. I used to be a caller. I get it. I get what it's like to hold. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with you guys next right here on The Drive. We'll recap this trade. Sports 1140 KHDK. Our thanks to Sam Amick. Let's do a giveaway right now at 339-1140. Crowded House playing in the background. Florida Georgia Line tickets for you September 14th. Toyota Amphitheater. More info on this at khdk.com, but get your pair of tickets right now at 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140.
What call are we doing?
Well, let's do 8 just for the heck of it.
That's my favorite number.
Is it?
Outstanding.
Oh, there you go, Kyle. Caller 8 at 339-1140 gets Florida Georgia Line tickets. It's interesting. The Players Union president in the NFL, Eric Winston, said that he was also, by the way, a Bengals offensive lineman. So the NFL can't afford another lockout. Looking like there's going to be one in 2021. He thinks it's inevitable. He says, quote, if there is a lockout, the NFL has signaled they're not worried about the game in 20 or 30 years. He says it will kill the goose that laid the golden egg. And what he said that really, I think, kind of got me. He said, honestly, I don't care, and I don't think the guys in this locker room care whether this thing, meaning the NFL, is going to be around in 20 years because none of us are going to be playing. Well, that's interesting. NFL's got some issues coming up. NFL's some big issues coming up. Enjoy it while you can. How's that going to be when Las Vegas gets the Raiders and they don't play for a year? That'd be fitting. John Jones has failed his UFC 214 drug test. Remember, he knocked out Daniel Cormier in the third round? Well, apparently he has tested positive from his in-competition sample collected at the weigh-in July 28th, the day before his fight. Jones tested positive for the anabolic steroid Tarinabol. Probably mangled that there. This is his third failed drug test. He tested positive for an anti-estrogenic agent back in July 2016. He tested positive for cocaine. He's had a lot of off-octagon issues. And this may be the end of his career. He's staring a 4-year suspension in the face. He's 30 years old. Interesting, but Dana White is in Las Vegas. Well, he's normally in Las Vegas, but was in Las Vegas supposed to be promoting the Conor McGregor-Floyd Mayweather fight this weekend. But, of course, this dominated his press conference. He said that they haven't talked. He and John Jones, other than high and by, haven't talked in years. That's no secret. I'm a huge John Jones fan. I respect greatness. I think John Jones is the greatest mixed martial artist to ever fight. I think this is, I don't want to call it a tragedy. I save that for, real world stuff, but this is a sports tragedy. We have a guy that has so much talent, is so good, is a once in a lifetime athlete. It had a chance to go down as maybe the most dominant athlete of his sport, of any sport. A guy who could just clear everything out. And now he's going to be a punchline, and it's going to be a what-if. It's going to be a big what-if for Jon Jones. Daniel Cormier hasn't happened yet, but I assume he will get the title back. I love Daniel Cormier as a person. I'm happy to see him, and he should get the title back. I also think that, unfortunately, through no fault of his own, Daniel Cormier's title will and should be forever tainted. It's always going to be, yeah, you're technically the champion. And Jon Jones doing this, this is a is a stretch, I'll admit. But it just kind of reeks of Barry Bonds. It reeks of Barry Bonds in the sense, and obviously Bonds didn't fail three drug tests. But it's one of those things that really, really gets me, because in both Barry and John's case, it's a situation where you feel like they didn't need to do this. They already had the talent. We've talked at length about FP Santangelo, former member of the station, local kid, former Major League Baseball player. Guys like FP, I don't condone it, but I understand a little bit more the fringe guy that cheats, that uses performance enhancers. I get that. I can understand a guy saying, I'm going to the minor leagues. I'm going to make, you know, 50 grand a year. If I put this needle in me, I'm going to sign one more deal for $4 or $5 million. And I'm going to be able to take care of my family and put my kids through college because I don't have the talent. You're cheating, yes. It's wrong, of course. But at least I can get that thinking. With John Jones and with Barry Bonds, they to me were both Hall of Famers. They both would have been able to take care of their kids forever. They both would still have been amazing. But John Jones is a joke now. He's an absolute joke. And there are some people that said he already was. I was one of those guys that when he beat Daniel Cormier, I wanted to believe in John Jones, that he had grown up. He had figured it out. He had gone through his self-imposed hell, and he had come out on the other end, and we were going to see another 3, 4, 5 years of John Jones just clearing everything out and realizing his potential. I was happy. I was happy when he beat Daniel Cormier. And now I'm just sick. I'm sick. It just sucks.
And like you said, he didn't need to do it. That's the worst part. He was killing everybody coming up through the ranks. I mean, there was no competition for him coming into the UFC. And he didn't. It's really frustrating.
His only loss to date was a disqualification against Matt Hamill, a fight in which he was winning. And was knocking him out and just hit him in the back of the head.
Right. That should have been, to me, that should have been called before he even got there.
100% agree. But then when you add that in, which had nothing to do with any of this, and somebody's on the text line saying, hey, listen, yeah, steroids, no one else can, that'll make you the best, right? Listen, this is going to be debatable forever. I personally believe, as a student of the sport, as somebody who's covered it for over a decade, as somebody who loves these fighters, I believe in my heart that if John Jones had never done a PED or anything, cocaine, steroid, I still believe John Jones would be the greatest mixed martial artist ever. I don't think that's what got him. Did it help him? I'm sure it did. Is it cheating? 1,000%. John Jones deserves every punishment he's going to get. I'm not defending him any way, shape, or form. I don't think he needed it. It's sad. It's really, really sad. More on the Kyrie Irving trade, Isaiah Thomas trade, Boston, Cleveland, where they're at. The lowdown, we'll have that coverage. No lowdown today?
We got A's at noon.
Ah, God dang it. I always get mixed up by that. So we got A's at noon?
Yeah, we sure do.
Grant Doug will talk about it all afternoon. I'll bet you the lowdown will still talk about it, just be off the air. So follow Damian and Jason on Twitter.
And I bet they talk about it tomorrow. Some point, that trade's coming up.
That trade's going to go. The from lowdown noon to 3. We'll cover it at some point. If I'm Damian and Jason, I'm so pissed I'm off the air today.
Right.
We're in the middle of summer. Nothing's going on. Finally, something crazy happens. Hey, but you know what? You got A's baseball. And they're on, as you've been saying, a one-game winning streak.
Yeah, they are.
Go A's. Break out those A's.
Look out.
We'll take a break. We'll come back with the reboot. Sports 1140 KHDK. Welcome back. It's the Rebrew. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Let's do the 12th caller right now. Marvel Universe Live, Age of Heroes Family 4-Pack for you. Win a pair of tickets to see Marvel Universe Live September 14th through 17th at the Golden One Center. More info at khdk.com. And if you're calling in, Kyle's going to be busy for a few seconds, so just hold the line. And Kyle, we'll get to you real quick before we get to Rebrew. Here's Rusty. Rusty, go ahead real quick. You're on the drive.
Morning, guys. Just a quick question with Jones. the cheating thing, well, first of all, I hate the saying, cheating ain't if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. So that goes to the heart there. But what happens to his purse? Does he lose what he was going to make on the fight? Does he collect it anyway?
Lose, and I'm not quite sure on the percentage. I know Brock Lesnar just went through this. God, I want to say it's 20%, 40%. He will lose a large percentage of his purse. He will have significant fines from the Nevada State Athletic Commission. He will be stripped of his belt as well.
So just wag it then. How much does he still wind up netting and possibly being able to take care of his family in the long term?
It's a good question, and I don't know the answers because MMA and the UFC in particular are notoriously goofy with what they disclose. You can see what his purse was, and I'm sure it was in the high six or low millions, but then a lot of times these fighters make double, triple, quadruple, if not more, off of points on the pay-per-view, generally champions of John Jones caliber. Although he wasn't a champion, actually, let me stop myself. He wasn't a champion in that case. I don't know if he's going to have. In fact, I'll say right now, I don't think he got points off this pay-per-view because he technically was not the champion. I think Daniel Cormier actually got the points. John Jones monetarily should be just fine. John Jones monetarily should be just fine. All right, let's get to Rebrew here. Rebrew number one. Come on, sticky computer. Somebody got pissed earlier in the show because we were talking about, I was opening up with Game of Thrones, and then somebody got pissed because we were talking about this story out of Virginia where Robert Lee was doing a college football broadcast with for Virginia game, their opener in Virginia. I'll say Virginia a few more times. And with everything going on in Charlottesville, ESPN felt like it would be bad form to have a guy named Robert Lee, who happens to be an Asian guy, Robert Lee, calling a game in Virginia. So they removed him and reassigned him to another game. I said, and I still feel this way, that ESPN's heart was in the right place. I do. I think they were trying to save their announcer. But in the end, they made this a much bigger thing than it would have been. And somebody got mad. You shouldn't be talking about that. I stick to other. There's a trade going on. Well, we spent 2 hours and freaking 40 minutes on the trade. So there you go. Rebrew number two. Is anybody else hearing static? I'm hearing static on this. I don't know if the listeners can hear this or not, but I'm hearing static. So I don't know if that was an issue with the recording. I don't know if that's an issue with the air. I don't know if that's as annoying to the listeners as it is in my ears. But I'm hearing me talk, and I'm hearing a bunch of static behind me. So somebody listening, 44-1140, let me know if they're static. I'll cut the Rebrew because we only have a couple more minutes, and I'll answer a couple questions I haven't had a chance to get to off the text line. By the way, Katie will be back tomorrow. She had a little surgical procedure on her nose yesterday. I'm sure we'll hear all about it in the morning blah tomorrow at 6 a.m. She had that yesterday. She's missing yesterday and today. She should be back, I believe. She'll be back tomorrow and Friday, and then, of course, she's off next week, much like when she was off a couple weeks ago. And for those of you who want to kill Katie for getting vacation, which is funny, nobody ever kills Katie for taking time off. They kill me whenever I take time off. I'll stand in front of her. She can only take vacation during the NBA offseason. That's about to start. Even if we get vacation from radio, she's going to be working nonstop until the middle of April. So I get it. If you're going to take the vacation, take it now. From the 916. Who is Dave picking, Connor or Floyd? Will there be popcorn or brownies while he's watching the fight? Well, that's an excellent question. First off, there will be popcorn. My brownie love is overrated. I like brownies. Somebody took a picture of me once eating brownies sitting behind Mark Jackson when he was coaching the Warriors, and that became a little meme-y, little meme-ish. Thank you, people, for saying there was static. Okay. I had brownies because that's what they had in the media room, and I'm a cheap bastard, and I will take whatever they have in the media room and take it to my seat and eat it.
The problem with brownies is that the line between a good brownie and a bad brownie is so thin.
100% agree. 100% agree. You got to have a chewy brownie. I like walnuts in my brownies, if I had to pick. I enjoy walnuts in my brownies. I like it for the texture. Although I will tell you, if I had my druthers, to me, the perfect brownie, it's a brownie with peanut butter swirled in it with some walnuts. Not almonds, not peanuts, not cashews. Walnuts, specifically made for a brownie. From the 916, weak move calling out your production crew. What are you talking? What? Hey, dude, nobody's calling out. First off, my production crew consists of Kyle, number one. Number two, there's a 90% chance that the recording had static behind it because of some program screw-up we have. I'm not blaming Kyle. And if it's Kyle's fault, that means he made one mistake to my 30 during the show. Let's see. Macadamia nuts and cookies are fine. White chocolate macadamia nut, if they're soft, I'm a huge fan. But the question was about Connor and Floyd. I'm picking Floyd Mayweather. I think this is a crap fight. I think the only reason this would go longer than a round or two is if Floyd's carrying him. And if for some godforsaken reason Connor wins, it's because Floyd threw the fight. I love the circus. I think it's fun and exciting. It's going to be an event. I will be watching it. We've talked about it. I'm not sitting there yelling at a cloud saying, get off my lawn. But in the end, this is nothing more than a WWE circus. It's a money grab for Floyd. It's a money grab for Connor. And most importantly, it's a money grab for WME, who bought the UFC for $4 billion and are watching their investment, for example, John Jones, completely disintegrate in front of their eyes. You are watching the UFC disintegrate, and this is a chance for WME to give a little bit of money and profit to their many, many investors. And there are a lot of people that unfortunately are being fooled by thinking Conor McGregor has a chance. Conor McGregor does not have a chance in this fight. The only chance Conor McGregor has is if Floyd throws the fight, because again, there's $500 million to $750 million. And those people out there that are looking at Polly Malignaggi doctored tapes, people out there that are watching Conor McGregor flop his arms like a fish. Conor McGregor is the greatest fight salesman since Muhammad Ali, and that's not hyperbole. But there is an entire legion of people that are being fooled into thinking that Conor McGregor has a chance in this fight. If you want to see how this fight goes, and if you want to see behind the scenes as to all the lead up in almost 90 to 95% accuracy where art imitates real life, go rent the movie Great White Hype with Damon Wayans and the guy that directs a bunch of them, what is it, Peter Berg? I mean, the Great White Hype, the guy's literally got Irish put in his nickname. He's not even Irish. It's the same thing, except the Great White Hype guy was a boxer, not a mixed martial artist. We got to go. My thanks to Kyle Madsen, Sam Amick, the rest of you. Katie will be back tomorrow. Enjoy the A's at noon. Jim Rome is next. Sports 1140 KHTK.